The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
I think this is the last solid report you're going to get for a long time. The trend is definitely decelerating. We have made the turn.
Rick, this is a big call. You think this is the last good one. What's leading you in that direction? Why do you think that?
It's a long list of companies that are freezing hiring and or cutting staff, and it is persistent.
Tesla CEO Elon Musk has a super bad feeling about the economy, and the electric car company needs to cut about 10% of jobs. That's what he wrote in an email to executives Thursday, titled Pause All Hiring Worldwide.
Record high gas prices are turning into major speed bumps for Americans who plan to travel this summer. This morning, the nation's average price for a gallon of regular is $4.76, another new record.
Don't expect it to get better anytime soon, says Gas Buddy's Patrick DeHaan.
This may be the low point for the summer in what could become certainly a very expensive summer to fill your tank.
While demand may peak midsummer, that's right when hurricane season ramps up.
Will we see a hurricane disrupt refining? If we do, that could prolong how long it will take to see a reprieve in prices.
Hurricane season has arrived, and for the past several years, we've experienced record-breaking tropical activity. Last week, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, also known as NOAA, released their outlook for this year, calling for yet another active season.
According to J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon, warning of an economic hurricane on the horizon.
It's a hurricane. Right now, it's kind of sunny. Things are doing fine. Everyone thinks the Fed can handle this. That hurricane is right out there down the road coming our way. We just don't know if it's a minor one or Superstorm Sandy. You better brace yourself.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
All things considered, it was actually a pretty good week overall in the U.S. stock market. Post last week's strong advance, several negative catalysts were, for the most part, weathered by investors. The three most relevant topics this week were oil, Fed officials talking about the glide path, and the jobs market. Oil prices continue to rise. There was a couple of news stories that influenced oil prices this week, the first of which was a story on Tuesday that EU leaders had agreed to a ban on 90% of Russia crude imports by the end of the year. That caused Brent crude oil to flirt with $120 a barrel before settling down to $114, almost $115. Later in the week, as a response to the ban, there was an article in the Financial Times that suggested Saudi Arabia is ready to increase production. News also hit that day that OPEC would raise production by 0.648 million barrels per day in July and August, which was an increase from a previous plan to raise just 0.432 million barrels per day. Investors responded by bidding up prices with the assumption the new increase still wouldn't be enough to satisfy demand. That's because on the same day, the EIA reported a draw of 5 million barrels last week. Oil closed on the week at $119 per barrel. Strength in oil caused concern over discretionary spending, inflation concerns, and led to an overall rise in the treasury rates, with the 10-year yield finishing this week 4 basis points higher to 2.96%. The 2-year yield remained sticky, with the 2 versus 10-year spread unchanged on the week at 28 basis points. The second relevant topic this week was a slew of Fed speakers giving their 2 cents on the Fed's glide path this summer, and we got a first glimpse on their opinions about what happens in September. Fed Governor Waller, an FOMC voter, said he supports policy rates above neutral by the end of the year in favor of 50 basis point hikes at several meetings. She also said she sees signs of initial slowing and reduced inflation, but said she needs to see more progress before the Fed can taper its increases. San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly supports 50-point hikes at the next couple of meetings. Fed Governor Brainard, an FOMC voter, said on Thursday that it is hard right now for her to see a case to pause hikes in September. Additionally, she said she wants to see a consistent string of data to show that inflation is cooling before adjusting her opinion. Last week, if you recall, stock prices were up after the Fed minutes with the idea the Fed is being aggressive now with hikes so that it may potentially pause late this year to see the effects. So, opinions will be important to track as we get closer towards September. The final topic this week is jobs and the economy. There were a lot of news items on this subject, so I thought it would make sense to spend some time on it. Let's talk first about some comments from JPMorgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon, who warned that while it is sunny now, an economic hurricane is coming because of quantitative tightening and the war in Ukraine. Tesla CEO Elon Musk sent an email to his executives this week that he has a super bad feeling about what is ahead and stated the workforce at Tesla needs to be reduced by 10%. Meta stated its hiring has been frozen and scaled back, and that has been echoed by Microsoft, Apple, Nvidia, and Netflix recently. For the most part, investors have shrugged the news off this week as the May jobs report showed a solid 390,000 jobs were added. But underneath the hood of the report, retail employment declined 61,000 and the number of part-time employees for economic reasons rose to 295,000 to 4.3 million, which shows that hours are being cut back. This is often a leading economic indicator my brother tracks very closely that lends itself to predict a drop in overall employment down the road. But the strong jobs data headline was enough to continue to argue no slowdown in the Fed's plans yet. That's it for this week's wrap-up report, which was basically a steady-as-she-goes stock market that consolidated on last week's gains on news of higher oil prices heading higher despite production increases. The Fed will stay tight and on rising job freezing chatter. Up next, Frank Barbera, this week's technician.
We've only just seen the very beginnings of this kind of stress. So your listeners probably didn't notice that Pakistan had a major change in government. If they did notice it, they probably didn't notice that it started with rising food prices. There was a state of emergency in Peru because of rising food prices, which led to protests, which are blocking some of the largest copper mines in the region and the operations there. So you're beginning to see the seeds of a lot of these different food crises around the world, but we're not there yet. And I do think that there is a world in which if you get weather to be a little bit more favorable than maybe forecasters are predicting, if you can get some kind of deal to allow Ukrainian exports to get out, or if the European Union can figure out the Tetris to get it out over land, there are ways here to try and avert it. But like I said, we're running out of time. And if we do get to a food crisis sort of point of view, you'll know it's a crisis. Those of us in the United States or in Western countries will be paying more for food and maybe we'll be seeing shortages, but you'll be seeing lots of political unrest around the world. The UN was warning about a famine in Eastern Africa. We're not there yet. You're not seeing those types of things happen quite yet. So I use the word crisis pretty sparingly. The situation is extremely grave. It is extremely serious. We only have a couple months, I think, before we start using the crisis word, but I'm just not quite there yet. I'm not optimistic about the direction we're going in, but things can get a lot worse than they are right now.
To listen to this full interview, in addition to gaining access to all of our premium content airing during the week, go to financialsense.com and hit the subscribe button.
Don't let higher inflation erode the value of your hard-earned wealth. Let us put our financial expertise to work for you. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management today at 888-486-3939 or email us at grow@financialsense.com. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Well, I guess the best thing you can say about the stock market, it hasn't gone completely down this week. At least we're in rally mode as we do this broadcast today. Joining us on the program is Frank Barbera. Frank, let's take it from the top. We had a nice rally last week, so-so this week. I guess the best you can say is we're not plunging anymore. So what's your take here?
My take, Jim, and I agree, was a very nice rally. The issue here, though, is the bigger picture from a sort of a, not so much a trader's point of view, but an investor's point of view. And what you see in the stock market is a very large distribution pattern, a pretty classic Edwards and McGee head and shoulder reversal that the S&P has slipped below. And we've also seen most of the major bellwether equities also breaking down out of what look like distribution tops. So I would say in general, the stock market is strongly in a bear market trend. The key resistance for the S&P is the area between 4180 and 4220. The S&P last traded around 4130. So there, you know, if it wanted to squeeze a bit higher, it could. There's a lot of resistance at 4300. I don't think we're going to get that high. I think there's a pretty good chance that the highs for the rally are already in, but you never know. Short-term squiggles are exactly that. They're short-term squiggles. And if the market wants to move a little higher, it probably has the room to do that. I would be watching any downside reversal below 4,000 on the S&P as a more definitive signal that the rally is over and that the next leg down is getting underway. And when you talk about that, the guys over at Morgan Stanley, they've been talking about, you know, the S&P contracting down to something closer to 14 times earnings. We're a lot higher than that right now, depending on which figures you use, but that would equate to like 3,400. And people are talking about a sell-off into maybe the September time period, because right now the Fed has three hikes priced in at the June meeting, the July meeting, and then the September meeting. And maybe the hope is that by September, after three more rate hikes, the Fed could go on pause for a while, and that might allow some breathing room for the stock market to have a nice trading rally. It's a really interesting time we live in. I don't think I've ever seen a six-month window because, you've got these Fed meetings and a potential pause in September. Then you've got the midterm elections in November. I don't think I've ever seen a six-month window that's really as fraught with risk as the time period we're in. And I would even include 2008 in that time, in that analysis. And I was a huge bear back then, and correctly so. But this to me feels, it has a whole different kind of feel, because I think what we're seeing this time is the actual economy under real stress. And when you look at the summer driving season coming up, there are acute shortages with diesel fuel. Inventory is near a 22-year low. We have a big percentage of the country's refineries that are offline. So we're not making enough fuel to run the trucks, which, you know, this is going to be the kind of thing where over the summer we could be running into real shortages and maybe rationing. And 65% of all the goods that are moved around go by truck. And then you can add in also jet fuel for airplanes, which is derived from diesel fuel. So to me, I think the risk is that we're going to see even higher energy prices as the summer comes about. And I was in my favorite Italian deli the other day talking to some of the guys, and they were loading up the store. And I was asking about the boxes of pasta. I said, you know, the DiCecco pasta, which is very good. I said, how are you guys doing on supplies? They said, well, it comes mostly from the East Coast. And the thing is, the East Coast is where the shortages are the most acute. So keep an eye on that, because I think that's a major issue. And the other one is more supply chain issues. Shanghai just reopened yesterday, but it has been locked down solid for most of the last 2 months. And in that time period, you've had a big clustering of ships off the coast of Shanghai have just piled up, these container ships, and they need to be loaded and then make the long journey. And if you look at the trip time between Shanghai and, let's say, Los Angeles, from the time a good leaves a warehouse in Asia to the time it hits an American port, right now that's 112 to 113 days. And what's interesting about that is that that duration has not come down. It about 2 years ago, it was about 55, 60 days to make that voyage. Now it's almost double that. And even though the ports managed to catch up on getting a lot of the containers, because we had a huge issue about 2 months ago, brought down in terms of they were processed, the whole time has taken a lot longer. And and I think you're going to see another big wave of that kind of shortage. The one offset is that some of these big retailers like Target and Walmart actually built inventories. And so they're sitting on pretty decent inventories right now. So it'll take some time for that to run off. But I think the supply chain issues, we have not seen the end of that. And the situation with Shanghai, which is going to be backlogged, sending out auto parts, semiconductor chips, things like that, That's another major issue. So to me, the framework right here, families are being squeezed by the high gas and high food prices. This is not only maybe a stock market bear market, but it also has the view of what Jamie Dimon yesterday, I'll quote Jamie Dimon, it's a gathering hurricane and it's offshore and it's economic in nature. And that's very different than anything we've seen in a very long time, JP.
Well, the thing that really strikes me, usually you see the Fed tightening, Frank, with an accelerating economy that's overheating. This time, at least this is the first time, at least in my career, we're seeing the Fed tighten when the economy is decelerating. So that is unusual in itself. And the fact that we're heading into this with higher rates of inflation, probably the highest in over four decades. And as you just mentioned, we've got shortages of diesel. We see oil going to 130 to 150. And right now, I just paid, what did I pay? I think I paid $6.59, Frank. And there's a gas station they showed on the news in your neck of the woods where diesel is $9 and gasoline is $8.
That is shocking. And, you know, as scary as it is, it actually could be a preview of coming attractions, even though it's isolated at the moment. And so that has me, as an investment advisor, really looking around at what is safe? How can we put money to work to manage this? And I would say right now, I'm intimidated by the stock market because it's got this big top. Most of my trend technical analysis, major trend models are negative. They're in bear territory. So I don't think, and we haven't seen the multiple come down on the market to something that makes any kind of sense relative to the environment we're in. I mean, maybe at 10 times earnings or 11 times earnings, you can look at some of the prior bottoms in the stock market where inflation was high. And that multiple is usually a lot closer to, let's say, 10 to 12 times earnings. And we're nowhere in that vicinity right now. So I think there's still a lot of risk in the S&P. It's even possible, and I'll say this with a couch, quotes around it, that we've seen a wave one and a wave two. That last week's rally was part of an Elliott wave two. The bad part about that means you could be rolling into a third wave down, and third waves down in the stock market are usually the most devastating. So that's where you get what's called a point of recognition, where the crowd comes to understand that you're in a serious bear market and momentum goes down and makes new lows. So to me, it's not surprising that the stock market is looking wobbly, given the fact that things around us are looking wobbly. This brings me to gold. And in my opinion, I think gold has possibly just made a very major low. Maybe one of the most important lows of the last 20 to 30 years. So I would rank this one up with 1999, 2011, 2012, some of these really major bottoms that you've seen in gold in the past. And what I'm watching for in the short term, just to give myself a little edge, because you know, gold, you look at these inflation hedges like Bitcoin, okay, it's going down. It's clearly in a bear market, but gold has been quiet and it's been in a holding pattern, what looks like a large sort of flat triangle consolidation. And I think the thing that's been kind of holding gold down has been the fact that we've been moving into this tightening zone. You've had all this hawkish Fed commentary, and that we're sort of fronting and we're moving into a slowdown or a recession, very likely a recession, because we've got one negative quarter in the books. Atlanta Fed just cut their GDP estimate for Q2 yesterday from 1.8 to 1.3% growth. Don't be surprised if that 1.3% growth whittles away and turns negative as well. So I think by early July, we might be looking at a back-to-back negative GDP quarters, which would technically put us in a recession, even though the jobs market is actually still pretty strong. And that hasn't weakened consistent enough to look like a deep recession or anything like that yet. So there are some positives out there, but the trend is certainly down in terms of economic growth. And I think that phase tends to hold gold down. But I think the other side of the coin is that gold tends to look ahead. It looks at things like the Fed maybe going on pause in September. It's a leading indicator of the next inflationary wave. And the one thing that's very clear to me is that that the Fed is nowhere in any kind of position. The level of fragility in this system, Jim, is extreme. So, you know, the Fed is sort of dancing around the garden here. They don't want to like step on any flowers. And so they're really tap dancing interest rates up very gently to try and let this is gradualism in reverse. You know, they don't want to hurt the stock market. But in so doing, they're really letting the inflation, 8%, which is the official inflation rate, be left unattended. So you've got this huge gap in deeply negative real rates. And I think there's a point of recognition coming here in crowd psychology where the market just says, hey, you know what? These guys have been behind the eight ball for a while. They're still behind the eight ball, and I need inflation protection. And that's, I think, where the money is going to start to shift and look at what is a cheap commodity relative to other commodities right now. That's gold and silver. Watch for a back-to-back 2% days in gold. I went back to April of 1968 through May 20th of this year. There have been 13,709 trading days, okay? That's the total number of trading days in gold's trading history since 1968, 13,709 through May 20th of this year. As of today, it has been 2,000, this is Thursday of this week, June 2nd, it has been 2,726 days since we have seen gold move back-to-back sessions, 2% or more. That is historically overdue. That has this longest we've ever gone without seeing two consecutive 2% back-to-back days in the physical gold market. You have to go back to August 8th of 2011, August 9th of 2011, when gold was up 2.59% and 3.52% back-to-back to see this. That's the last time. And usually, those back-to-back 2% days are either happening in a climactic spike into a top where you have roaring enthusiastic sentiment, or they come after you've had deep fear and you're kicking off a bull leg. And in the last few weeks, every one of my technical indicators on gold, the dollar-weighted puts to calls, selling intensity, all of it, medium-term RSI, they have come down to deep oversold levels and high levels of fear. So if we see two back-to-back 2% days, that's probably a good sign that gold is kicking off and it's going to launch up and break out above 2,000. I think we're heading to 3,000 or more in the next couple of months. And I think you're going to see this very quiet gold market come roaring back to life.
Frank, how much of what is going on with gold? Because if we take a look at the commodities, we believe we're in one of the biggest bull markets in commodities. Probably haven't seen anything like this since the 00 decade when gold, oil, all commodities exploded. But you've had copper explode, you've had oil, natural gas, base metals, and gold hasn't. How much of that, Frank, has been alternative investments? We've got the cryptocurrencies. You've got ETFs for just about every commodity in every market in the globe. How much of that is competition?
I think a chunk of it has been. I think, it's easy to – there's a couple of variables, okay? First one is that gold went between 2010 and 2012, we had a two-year bear market. Then we had an extended base for a while. So gold was depressed. It had come from 2000 down to closer to 1100. And we've had a nice bull market of sorts in the last 2 to 3 years where it came back up and tested the highs. But anytime you come back up and test a high that you haven't seen for 5 or 10 years, the first crack at those highs, you're going to have some resistance. You're going to run into selling pressure and it's going to need to back away. And that, I think, is a technical factor that's been holding gold back, is that it's been having to chew through that resistance at 2000. And actually, if you look at it on a log scale over like 20, 30 years, it's really been a very orderly, very consolidated type pause phase that we've seen in gold. Nothing really untoward. And so I think crypto siphoned off some action because crypto was its own mania. And that took away in the early stages of this inflation, some of the attention from gold. But I think at this stage of the game, you've got, crypto on the downswing, really locked in a deep bear market. I mean, below moving averages, momentum making new lows. It's ugly. And that's going to take a lot of time to turn that around, while gold is just bubbling along right underneath all-time highs. And the selling pressure has just been consistently drying up over time. You look at crude oil, which is basically near record highs. Grains are at record highs. And where are the obvious go-to, undervalued, overlooked, ignored commodity plays? That's the precious metals. And I think that's where we're going to see a violent upside reversal very soon. And I think that has a lot to do with just a general weakening in confidence. Confidence has been going snap, crackle, pop, just like the cereal, in terms of policy. And there's a certain point there where people say, okay, we're not doing the things that we need to do to get things back on track. And okay, I'm going to be my own central bank and I'm just going to go off and take care of myself, get me back up the truck on the precious metal. And I think that's really the psychology that's coming, both from individuals and also we're going to see institutions rotate in.
Frank, let's talk about, you mentioned Shanghai has been under lockdown for several months. We've got diesel shortages. The feeling was, at least the Fed's been talking about this, by the time we get to the fall, the supply issues are going away. Well, we're seeing more of those supply issues, whether it's diesel fuel, baby formula. I don't know about what it's like in your neck of the woods. When I go to the store, I'm beginning to see shelves in the store that are empty. So the supply issues continue. The reason I'm bringing this up is the thinking is, well, by the time we get to the fall, the Fed will have to stop because the economy will be in a recession. We're heading into the November elections, and no Fed wants to look political. So there's this scenario. We get to September, they're going to stop. They may pivot. What's your take on that scenario? Because last year, it was like inflation was transitory. This year, the saying is, well, it's a soft landing. I've only seen one soft landing with the Fed in my career, and I doubt if this will be soft.
Yep. I noticed that the last minutes, they had the word restrictive in the language. And we are so far away from restrictive, it's not funny. I am worried that there's a kind of a delusion going on that the inflation is just actually going to get worse, that it's going to go from 8% to 9% or 10%. I sincerely hope to God I'm wrong about that. I mean, I see, used car prices, they say, are coming down. There are some TV pressure, there's enough supply that, some of these electronics may come down. But you have to watch food prices, because what they're saying is that the farmers are not, a lot of them got the fertilizer really late in order to plant. And so the planting is maybe 50% less is what I've been hearing and reading. And then you've got other issues with food production. So to me, it seems like, I read an article last night. They said food prices could be double what they are right now in a couple of months. And that is shocking. So to me, that means it may be very, very sticky, this 8% inflation, or it may even go higher depending on if there are real shortages. And then there's this unknown with Shanghai, which was really a very unusual outcome. I mean, to lock down 27 million people for a number of weeks, kind of pretty extreme. And what that did, whatever the issue there is it has created a situation where the resupply of globalization, product coming from China to the United States, you may have another bump along those lines. That could be additive as well. Who knows? But I think there's a lot of issues out there to keep an eye on. And if the inflation doesn't back off, the unseen boogeyman could end up being that the Fed can't go on pause and may have to actually continue to hike rates at an accelerating pace. And that's something I think that's a significant risk in the equation. This is why it's a good time to just go slow.
And Frank, let's talk about some of the big tech stocks, your Apple, your Microsoft, your Google, Amazon's. These were the, the Fab Five that really pushed the indexes to levels we haven't seen before. They're starting to break down. Apple's down about 17%. As you look at the big Fab Five stocks, they're starting to break down. Do they go further, or are they just going to be the generals are going to hold up better than the troops?
Well, I would say that if you looked at conventional thinking, the conventional thinking would be that they'd hold up well. But that has not really been the case. We've seen a number of the sort of glamour names from the past just getting chiseled and hammered down. Netflix, Amazon has taken a huge hit, Roku. I mean, there's a lot of these, Nvidia, a lot of these big names have been under really systematic selling pressure. So to me, I think it's going to end up having to depend on the multiple, and they all have a very high multiple. And the other thing is bonds and rates. And when you look at the 10-year, the 30-year bond right now, the 10-year bond, I'll use the 10-year just as an example. I'm going to get my notes here. The 10-year bond is at 2.74%. Okay, since April 11th of this year, the 10-year bond was at 2.78% on April 11th. The 9-day RSI, which is a momentum indicator, peaked on April 11th at plus 82. It now bottomed on May 27th at plus 40, 39.62. The net give back as RSI went from over 80 down to 40 was 3 basis points, 2.78 to 2.74. That's what's called a running correction in bond yields. We unwound the excess overbought. And what you see in bear markets, the normal scale on RSI is 30 to 70. 30 is oversold, 70 is overbought. It's a normalized indicator on a 0 to 100 range. So in a trading range environment, that will go back and forth between 30 and 70. In a bull market, it tends to shift up. It goes 80, 40. You get more overbought in bull markets and you tend to stay there. And then you unwind, you never get down to fully oversold, you get to shallow oversold in bull markets. In bear markets, it's a 60-20 rule. So what we are seeing in bond yields, which is interest rates, is an 80-40 move in RSI. We've gone from, again, 82 to 40, no give back in yield of any appreciable degree. And that tells me yields are getting poised to move through 3%. And if they actually move through 3.248%, which is the October 2018 highs, any move above 3.25 will put the 10-year bond to a decade high. You'd have to go all the way back to June 30th of 2011 when you move above 3.25%. That's a freakout point. I think if the 10-year bond moves through a 10-year high, the markets are going to stand up and take a lot of notice. And what I think you're seeing right now is a setup for that leg. To me, bond yields look like the long-term chart is really breaking down. If you look at something like the TLT, which is at 116, there's some support from October 2018 at 111, 112. January of 2014 at 101, but I've got a feeling we're really heading back to the 2011 lows on TLT, which would be around 87. And that's a lot closer to a 5% handle on the 30-year bond. So I think you could have 2 percentage points yet to come in terms of upside pressure on long-term yields. And again, that feels like a headwind.
You know, the interesting thing, Frank, this reminds me, I was looking at similar inflationary markets, and the last one was 1966 to 82. And if you look at that market, we had short bull markets. They would last 18 months, maybe 2 years, followed by another bear market. And you didn't get these long extended waves up like we had in the 80s, the 90s, and the 00 decade and the last decade where you went 7, 8, 10 years of upward markets. They were more like 1 or 2 year instances, short bull markets and short bear markets. Could you see something like that unfolding in this decade?
It's so funny that you say that, Jim. I wrote a special report called The Greater Invisible Crash just on that subject. That's my main thesis, is that I called it the greater invisible crash because I think we're dealing with something that's on 1 degree higher order of magnitude. But between 1966 and 1982, the Dow traded in a range between roughly 580 on the low end and 1050 on the high end. And so it just grinded sideways, as you say, in these alternating two-year up, two-year down, two-year up, two-year down bull markets. What was the same case, though, back then is that over that 16-year period of time, inflation accelerated. It went from very low, 1 or 2%, to 18%, right? 16, 17% in 1981. And so if you adjusted the stock market in constant dollar terms, all that sideways of going nowhere in the indices, while inflation was going steadily up at effectively an ever-increasing rate, meant that stocks were losing purchasing power, and the Dow lost between 1966 and 1982 73% of its purchasing power. And that's why I call it the invisible crash, because in constant dollar inflation-adjusted terms, stock indices went down. Now, what is interesting about that period of time, I went back and I did all the group work. And if you break out the groups, consumer discretionary was down 86% between 1966 and 1982. And what did that show? That showed families under effectively a very high income stress. They were not going out and buying expensive sneakers or, you know, widgets. They were worried about getting food on the table. Now, at the same time, if you were looking at the means of production and going out to find more oil, like the oil service stocks, they went up several thousand percent in that same period of time. The gold stocks went up several thousand percent. Silver stocks, basically the market bifurcated. And the natural resource sector, which was a small piece of the pie, just like it is today at the beginning of that whole, because in the 20 years that ran up into 1966, you had the go-go fund era. And, you know, the big stocks were Sperry Rand, Brunswick. You had a lot of growth names that were really leading the market, leading into the 1966 highs, Avon products, and then Eastman Kodak. And then as those growth stocks took basically two decades off, the money bifurcated in its shift. It started crowding into the natural resource space, energy, the Standard Oil of New Jersey, the Standard Oil of Indiana, Standard Oil of Ohio. They had all these different energy companies, Texaco, Unocal, all these names that are gone and consolidated today. But those stocks, along with the Schlumbergers, the Halliburtons, the Homestakes, the Callahan Minings, all of those stocks did phenomenally well. And at the very end, as inflation got really bad, we saw a big bull market in gaming stocks because the value of money was losing so rapidly, people actually started pushing money into casino stocks. They figured, I'll just let it roll on the table instead of holding it in savings. And so that was Resorts International and Bally's. That came at the very end. So the bifurcation that you saw between 66 and 82 was very telling. And I think we're doing that. The problem is, I think this is an order of magnitude larger because the debt levels are larger. The money supply is infinitely larger, and probably the degree of embedded inflation that we're going to need to bring all this down through some kind of systematic devaluation over time is going to be just a whole order of magnitude bigger. And this is why it's very, very important for people to have a good grip on what they're doing with their capital. The allocations, the asset allocation has to shift dramatically.
Couldn't agree more. Listen, Frank, as we close, if our listeners want to follow your work, you have a gold newsletter. Tell people about it and how they can find you.
That's fine. Thank you so much, Jim. You're always very kind. And I want to also say I always appreciate tremendously your having me on the show. My email address is frankbgst@aol.com. That's Frank. B as in Barbera, GST, Gold Stock Technician @AOL.com. If you drop me an email, I will send you a free copy of the letter.
All right. And Frank, Friday night, you're still in the bunker, so I don't know if you can barbecue down there.
No. Friday night, the new thing, Jim, is heading out a little to grab some spaghetti here and there.
Grab the pasta while it's still available.
I'm looking at the rice and the pasta. I'm kidding. But, I don't know what to do. It's not good. I look at the price of chicken and meat. It's all going up. It's nuts. You need the gold.
Well, maybe we're on to dog food next. So.
No, let's hope not.
Okay.
Take care, JP.
You too.
We are below that 5-year average range right now. This is a period where we should be seeing a buildup in inventories. We are getting into the high demand season. People are determined, despite inflation, to travel. We have 95%, I believe, of our air travel from 2019 that's returned. Jet fuel demand is rising. People are driving. We have a lot more energy usage coming this summer, where typically you would already have a high inventory level going into this period. So this increased demand that's going to keep on coming this summer would seem to exacerbate the situation because supply cannot rise fast enough to meet that. So whatever shortage we have right now is only going to increase.
To listen to this full interview, in addition to gaining access to all of our premium content airing during the week, go to financialsense.com and hit the subscribe button. Chris Poplava is the CIO of Financial Sense Wealth Management. He joins us today for another edition of Smart Macro. So Chris, in this week's investment video that we posted on our site and on YouTube on Monday, you explained why you didn't think that we've seen the bottom in the stock market so far and listed two pretty significant headwinds. Let's start with the first headwind that you pointed to, which is China reopening. Why is China moving out of a lockdown a problem for U.S. stocks in particular, as you see it?
Well, the primary concern that I see in the U.S. is inflation. I mean, and that's public enemy number one. It's what the Fed is fighting. It's what consumers are worried about. It's what the White House is worried about going to the November elections in terms of how they'll poll. And so with China reopening, that should help some of the supply chain bottlenecks. But one of the concerns that I do have with the significant shortages in inventories of commodities that we currently have will get more pronounced, and that we could see pretty rapid commodity price inflation. And for example, one of the things that we noted is as China was starting to reopen in May, oil prices immediately started to tick back up. Even copper itself started to move back up after having a decline in April. And as I mentioned, my concern is supply and demand. Right now, when we look at inventories for aluminum, lead, copper, zinc, cobalt, tin, all of these major commodities that are used in manufacturing are near multi-decade lows. We really don't have the spare capacity for these commodities. So if you think about it, I mean, we saw a pretty significant commodity inflation this year, even with very draconian lockdowns in China. So you can only imagine when China kicks back up to full steam and starts consuming these commodities, what that will do to the overall price of these commodities. And as I mentioned in the meeting on Monday, when we look at the Bloomberg Commodity Index, its annual appreciation relative to the appreciation or annual inflation rate, there is a very strong correlation there. And so my concern is that if China reopens, increases demand for commodities in general, and a real lack of supply. I mean, we did hear that OPEC is going to increase production But I really feel that the only spare capacity is in Saudi Arabia, which I think is the big main reason why President Biden is visiting Saudi Arabia and flying over there to meet with the prince, is to do whatever, or to push Saudi Arabia to do whatever it can to increase production. But other OPEC members don't really have a lot of spare capacity. And we're really not promoting production here in the U.S. So, you know, if China reopens, they start to consume more oil. If you think about all the people in China that were locked in their homes, they're not driving their vehicles, they're not at the manufacturing plants, producing plastics, which use petroleum is the main component for creating plastics. So as they start to return to work and normal commerce, you're going to see the vehicle miles driven in China rapidly pick up, which obviously is going to lead to a direct increase in demand for oil. So my concern is we could see a dramatic spike in oil this summer, because not only is China starting to ramp back up, this is the peak in heading into the U.S. summer driving season. So this is when seasonally the U.S. is seeing peak demand for gasoline, and you're also seeing a resurgence in demand coming from China. So those two factors alone, I think, could really push oil prices higher. And we're also likely to see food demand pick up as well, as you've got more Chinese consumers being able to go about, go to the grocery store, go to restaurants and so forth. So that is a major concern I have, is that we could see a spike in commodity inflation with China reopening. You know, as I mentioned, the U.S. consumer is typically, when we look at gasoline inventories, on average, they typically peak in January, February, and they start to decline and fall all the way into roughly November, when demand falls as refiners shift towards winter fuels. And so right now, when you look at where we are in terms of inventories at this time of year, we are below the lowest point over the last 5 years. We are below the lowest extreme of the five-year average. So we are not at a good starting point going into the summer driving season.
Yeah, and we're going to have a number of these charts posted where this interview is located on Financial Sense. If you want to take a look at these, as well as the video that, Chris, you conducted this week on Monday, pointing to all these different data points that we're going to be bringing up today. But yeah, U.S. consumers are hitting the road this summer, and gasoline inventories are on the range of perhaps 5 to 10 year lows, just as we're heading into summer driving season. So this is a tailwind for further gas prices. And some headlines out there are saying that we could see double-digit gas prices, at least for certain areas where, you know, maybe like California or parts of the coast, maybe not inland, the Midwest, of course. But gasoline prices are certainly hitting consumers' wallets very hard. And so the question is, how much of a retrenchment I think we're going to see, right, as inflation continues to bite, both in food, in energy, electricity, I mean, you name it, it's across the board now.
That's absolutely correct, Chris. I mean, you know, we're almost possibly heading into a somewhat of a similar Y2K moment where, you know, when we were switching from 1999 to the year 2000, you know, a lot of digital payment systems weren't ready for 00. Well, you know, in terms of U.S. gasoline stations, you know, a lot of the pumps aren't geared for double digit prices. I mean, we're, you know, we've been used to single digit prices ever since we've had gasoline stations. So, you know, that kind of speaks to the issue of how rapidly prices are escalating here with the recovery, you know, in the post-COVID environment. So it definitely is a big concern. And if you think about it, if we do see the U.S. economy slow down, as has been the case, we've basically seen a deceleration in literally everything, whether it's retail sales, annual growth rate, job annual growth rate, manufacturing. I mean, literally the whole economy is decelerating. And if we have a major spike in energy prices and other commodities, we could be heading towards a stagflationary environment. So definitely something to worry about as we head into the latter part of the summer.
So some of the charts that I want to encourage our listeners to pay close attention to, if they haven't already, is the chart where you show that current base metal inventories stand near multi-decade lows. And you pointed to aluminum, lead, copper, zinc, cobalt, tin, just to name a handful of them. But you can see very clearly from the chart, I mean, inventories are at record lows here for a number of really important commodities. So that tends to line up with the idea that we're looking at a longer term above average outlook for inflation, which you have been warning about. You look at commodities and these key inputs, including fossil fuels, at multi-year, if not multi-decade lows. That means it's going to take a really long time to build those inventories. So the focus now is, of course, on the demand side, and that's what gets us to the second headwind that you identified in this week's investment meeting. So tell us about what you're seeing on the demand side, particularly when we look at the economy.
Well, you know, I think it's really important to understand what drove the market decline so far this year. And what we look at it is the decline in the, for example, the S&P 500 has been entirely driven by valuation multiples like, you know, the PE ratio. And that is in response to tighter financial conditions. So the decline we've seen this year is in response to tighter financial conditions, which have impacted price multiples on the market. And that's important to think about, because when you look at, for example, the price to earnings ratio, that has seen a decline. And that decline has been due to the numerator, which is prices falling, while earnings have been relatively constant. So again, you know, the decline in valuations has been price driven. What I am concerned about in the back half of this year is the denominator, which is earnings. When I look at all the leading economic indicators that I follow, they continue to point towards the economy slowing throughout the remainder of 2022. I really do not see that being priced into earnings estimates for the broad market. And I think the lack of a reduction in earnings estimates is why we've seen in some of the big box retailers huge price declines. You know, a good example of that is Walmart. When Walmart released their earnings, the market responded where Walmart had the greatest decline since the October 1987 crash. I mean, that is major for Walmart to experience that level of a decline given the outlook as well as their earnings results. We saw similar, you know, large declines in Target and other retailers. So I think that still lies ahead. And my concern is when you look at the market, typically there's a very strong correlation with the S&P's annual appreciation and the ISM Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index. And, you know, looking at other slowdowns, typically what we've seen, growth slowdowns last roughly 2 years. And if we have a continued slowdown without a response by the Fed, the market typically heads lower.
You know, Kurt Kalous, that we spoke with on FS Insider this week, made a really good point. And that was historically, when you look at the stock market and oil prices, the stock market can go up as oil prices trend higher. But typically when we see a precipitous spike like we see now, and the current spike in oil prices looks very similar to what we saw during 2008, that when they rise this quickly, that is a headwind for stock prices. And typically you don't see a sustainable market bottom until oil prices crash and reach a bottom. And that would also coincide typically with a Fed pivot saying, okay, the inflation has been wrung out of the system. And now at this point, you know, we can move away from tightening and towards a more accommodative posture. What are your thoughts on that outlook?
You know, again, that's a big concern of mine, is that the U.S. economy is already in the process of slowing down. And one of the things that I highlighted at the end of the presentation on Monday was that major things that tend to lead the ISM index, such as the change in 10-year U.S. Treasury yields, that has a very long lead time of the ISM that projects the ISM will decline not only for the remainder of 22, but also into 23. And then when we look at smaller leading indicators like the ISM new orders less inventories, which leads the headline by roughly 3 months, that's also pointing that the next 3 months should continue to see the ISM fall. Now, again, these are trends that are already baked in the cake based on prior tightening seen in interest rates, and as well as, you know, inventory new orders, the difference between those two. So if we have continued spike in energy prices, while, you know, basically the indicators I mentioned give you trend, they don't really tell you amplitude. They don't really give an exact science in terms of where and how far the ISM number could fall. If we have energy prices rise considerably from here, that could really increase the decline that we see in the ISM index, not just to, you know, neutral at 50, but, you know, in contractionary territory, which is below 50. So that could just exacerbate the decline that is likely to be seen for the remainder of this year.
Yeah, and as you and I are speaking right now, it's June 3rd and 11:30 a.m. Pacific. Oil prices are just under $120 at $119. So we are continuing to see oil prices spike higher. Again, this looks similar to what we saw during 2008 when oil prices were just moving vertical. So if that trend continues, there's no guarantee that it will, but if it does continue at this rate, I mean, we could easily be looking at $150, $200 per barrel over the next few months as again, we see summer driving season, a lot more demand from the consumer side for travel, and these things hit, not to mention the possibility of a hurricane as well, which would be a whole nother issue when it comes to refinery output and some of the bottlenecks that we're seeing there for gas prices. So lots of things to be aware of for the months ahead. But bottom line, Chris, so this week's investment video, you're outlining really two major headwinds for why you think we're not likely looking at the final market bottom for this year. That is one, commodity prices. They continue to move higher. So that means further inflationary pressure. And of course, the response to that is the Fed has to remain in their aggressive posture. And then second, this is all within the context of an ongoing economic slowdown. And the data continues to bear that out, that the trend is for slower growth for the remainder of this year. So more headwinds for the stock market. We're likely not looking at a final market bottom. And that was the main message. Would that about summarize your view so far?
I would say mostly. One thing I do want to kind of put as a caveat to this is, you know, again, because of these headwinds, I don't see the market making a sustained advance. Now, if some of the negative shocks that I see lying ahead come in softer than expected, and we have some possible bullish developments, then maybe what we do is we just trade sideways in the market for a while. And once those headwinds are removed, then the market finally starts to make some progress and head north. Now, if we have some of those issues like growth slowing or inflation surprise negatively or other types of negative shocks, then we could very easily go below the lows that we saw last month. So what the main point I want to get across is I do not see the market making a sustained advance from here, given the headwinds I see. Now, the best case scenario is we trade sideways. The worst case scenario is we actually end up hitting new lows. So I think that the takeaway is that the case for sustained stock prices from here, I think, is quite weak. And so that's the main point I want to get across.
Well, Chris, as we close, I want to make sure our listeners are aware Financial Sense Wealth Management has been named as one of the top investment advisory firms in the U.S. by the Financial Times. Of course, we provide asset management, financial planning services. Would you mind giving our listeners an update on where we stand? Obviously, you're still much more on the cautious side. Where does Financial Sense Wealth Management stand today in terms of official outlook for the market?
Well, we continue to have a minimum equity exposure in our balanced accounts. So we are active, so we can go below our benchmark or above it in terms of our equity allocation. Same thing on the fixed income side. And so when we look at both asset classes, we have a below average exposure to both. One of our recent changes, though, is I do think the market will start to worry more about economic growth and the odds of potential recession relative to inflation. And that could very well put a peak in interest rates. So I think the massive rise in interest rates here in the U.S., I think, has done a very good job of discounting the inflation that we've seen. But if we do see some moderation in inflation, then we're likely to see the peak in interest rates going into the next several months. So we have started to increase overall maturity on the bond side of the portfolio. We were massively underweight maturity relative to our benchmark on bonds. We've now begun to increase that to at least neutral. A lot of other big firms like BlackRock, Vanguard, a few other like Morgan Stanley, they've all kind of said that, you know, there's a good chance that interest rates have peaked for the cycle. And I think that's very true. And just this week, I believe Jamie Dimon came out saying that we're headed towards a hurricane in terms of what he sees for the U.S. economy ahead, and that J.P. Morgan is remaining defensive with their balance sheet. So I definitely think we do need a brace for greater volatility. I think it would be significantly premature for anyone to think that the bottom is in and the markets are going straight up. Again, I think the best case is the markets have bottomed and are going to go sideways. Worst case is we head lower. So we still have a minimum risk exposure for our clients to the stock market. We are looking to eventually buy the dip, but we don't feel that time is right just yet.
Yeah, and just on the recession remarks too, you know, there's an ensemble of different recession indicators that we follow, and some of them have ticked up to higher probability levels, not all of them. So we are watching that closely in terms of our risk exposure. I wouldn't say that it's, you know, 100% odds of a recession now at this point. Some people are making that call that we're in a recession right now. The large range of recession indicators that we follow aren't lining up with that, but a continued price spike in oil and commodity prices could certainly tip us that direction. So lots of variables to look at, things to track in real time. And all of these, again, which you provide in video format, both on our website and on YouTube. So I do want to encourage all of our listeners, be sure to check out those videos that we post. We'll have a link out to them where this interview is located, again, with some charts that you can take a look at. And Chris, always a pleasure to speak with you on Smart Macro. We look forward to having you on the show again.
Thanks, Chris. Always a pleasure as well.
That concludes our weekend edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. To speak with our financial planning and wealth management team, give us a call at 888-486-3939 or go to financialsense.com and click where it says Contact Us. If you aren't already a subscriber to our weekday podcast and would like to listen to more of our content where we regularly interview book authors, industry experts, and strategists from around the globe, go to Financial Sense and hit the subscribe button. On behalf of Financial Sense News Hour and the Financial Sense Wealth Management team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.